I'm Marco Werman, and you're tuned to The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. A lot of factors usually come together to create the conditions for a famine, and right now, four nations, Somalia, South Sudan, Nigeria, and Yemen, are facing the threat of famine at the same time. The United Nations calls the situation the worst humanitarian crisis since World War II, potentially affecting 20 million people.
The sun is beating down day after day in these places, and there's no sign of rain on the horizon.
That's Jeffrey Gettleman, East Africa Bureau Chief for The New York Times. He recently returned from a trip to the drought-plagued town of Baidoa in Somalia.
It's incredibly dry. The land is very dusty, stony. What little grass is dry, yellow, brittle. The sun has been beating down for months. In many of these places, there's no clouds in the sky. It's just piercing sunlight from sunrise to sunset. Very hot. Rivers are drying up. Crops have failed. People are not able to get clean water to drink, and they're getting sick from diseases like cholera. Then they pack into these camps that sort of pop up overnight, and those camps really don't have much either. There's little food or water in them. So then you have all these people who are sick, their immunity systems are compromised, and diseases quickly spread.
This scene is actually duplicated in the other three countries we mentioned, South Sudan, Nigeria, and Yemen. We tend to think of famine as a lack of food, but would you say the key element now in all these places is that they're lacking water, clean drinking water?
Famines have happened from time to time, and the aid community is constantly trying to learn from the last one. And this was a big lesson in the famine of 2011, was that many people died from lack of clean water, not from lack of food. And they can trace this with these complicated mapping schemes where they look at where most of the deaths were concentrated in the last famine. And they weren't in these parched desert areas where nomads roam around looking for grass or for water. They were in cities where people were concentrated and they had some water, but it was very dirty. And that led to the spread of disease. And so now the effort is to try to address that directly and say, okay, this isn't just about food. This is about sanitation, hygiene, and clean drinking water. And that changes the response a little bit, but it also makes it harder because it's much harder to airlift water than it is sacks of grain.
Okay, I mean, this becomes obviously a vicious cycle in these refugee camps and their clinics. Tell us about someone you met who is dealing with cholera and what they're facing right now.
Picture a tent with a canvas roof and a sort of bare dirt floor and people lying on stretchers. And often they're with the relatives and you see somebody trying to fan the flies and keep somebody cool as they're lying on the ground. And I talked to one man who was hunched over a very, very old woman. And I asked him who he was and what was going on. And the woman was his mother. And she looked, I mean, her face almost looked like a skeleton. Very deep eye sockets, very sharp cheekbones, very, very little flesh. And this man was patiently using this homemade fan to get the flies off her. And he said that she had gotten sick in her village and that he had helped carry her to this treatment center. And at the treatment center, there really isn't much. There's a few IVs, some doctors or nurses that look at patients, but often they're very far along in this cholera disease. And it's difficult to bring them back. This is happening all across Somalia, and it's also happening in these other countries like Nigeria and South Sudan.
What kind of scenarios are aid officials looking at if things don't improve? Like just on the waterfront, if things don't improve there, what happens next?
The worry is you could have hundreds of thousands of people dying at the same time from these diseases, which are very preventable. Cholera can be treated with oral rehydration salts and IVs if it's caught early enough. And it can be stopped from spreading if people are washing their hands and eliminating the bacteria instead of spreading it person to person. So the scenarios could be really bad. You could have major death in several areas at once.
And for the nation of South Sudan, which is also facing famine, the youngest nation in the world, is it basically already a failed state after just a few years?
South Sudan is not in a good position right now. Just this weekend, six aid workers were killed in an ambush trying to go to their jobs delivering aid in a rural part of South Sudan. They were civilians that were caught up in a robbery. The circumstances aren't even clear, and they were killed on the side of the road. So South Sudan has many problems. It's got a political vacuum at the center. It's got tens of thousands of young men with arms who are fighting each other. And now it's got this big problem of how to deliver aid to these very needy areas. And if you have six aid workers killed at one moment, that just scares and terrifies all the other aid groups from trying to deliver aid. And that becomes a big, big problem of how can you even get supplies into these areas if the aid workers aren't welcome and they're going to lose their lives trying to do that.
Jeffrey Gettleman is based in Nairobi, Kenya, and covers sub-Saharan Africa for the New York Times. Thank you very much for your time, Jeffrey.
Glad to help.
Our data team's been working on different ways to visualize the current famine crisis and why modern famines are man-made disasters. You can see maps of the crisis and data on how it's expected to get worse at PRI.org.